Jimmy, Jimmy Corain, Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Oh.
Hey everybody, this is Jimmy Corain, and you're listening to another episode of Improv Nerd, sponsored by my award-winning improv classes here in Chicago, The Artist Low Comedy, where I teach you, before you can be funny, you need to be real. And you know what happens? You're even funnier. My classes are limited to no more than 12 people, so you get personal stage time, plenty of feedback, and those reps you need to become an even better improviser. We have an advanced Artist Low Comedy with a performance, a long-form performance, starting at the end of October. For more information, go to my website at jimmycorain.com. Also brought to you by the good people at Hotel Lincoln. So the next time you find yourself here in the city of Chicago and you're looking for a cool boutique hotel that's close to everything, it's not only pet-friendly, it's improviser-friendly as well, and that is no joke. Check out the official hotel of Improv Nerd, Hotel Lincoln. This episode comes to you from Austin, Texas, where we were down there and we recorded 4 episodes of Improv Nerd. This is the second of those episodes. And our guest today is a former cast member of Saturday Night Live, an amazing improviser. He started out at the IO Chicago. We're talking about Paul Britton. Now, before we get into this interview, if I was doing this on public radio or had any sort of journalist integrity, I would say, for full disclosure, Paul Britton was a student of mine years ago at the IO Chicago, where he started out when I was first teaching the Artist Low Comedy. We talked to him about how he got into improv in the first place and how he was a huge stand-up comedy fan when he was growing up, and that his uncle is actually Bob Newhart. We talked a little about my idol, Bob Newhart, and we also talked to him about how he got the audition at IO Chicago and how that led to getting hired on Saturday Night Live. We talked about Saturday Night Live and how it was a dream of his, and he has a great story about working with Sir Paul McCartney from the Beatles. I think you're going to love this episode. And what I loved about this episode is Paul Britton is a great, great, great improviser. And I just had a blast working with him. Before we get to the interview with Paul, as you know, last month I traveled to Austin, Texas for the Out of Bounds Comedy Festival. And I actually stayed there, I believe, 4 nights in a hotel. Originally, my wife and I were going to, my wife Lauren, we were going to do a vacation down to Austin because it's a place we've never been to before and we both really wanted to go. But she decided instead she was going to Pennsylvania to see her family, which was really a good move on her part because I can't mix business with vacations. And Lauren has gone on a couple with me before and they've always turned out to be really, really stressful and really hard because I'm always focusing on the work, and Lauren is always focusing on, like, we're here, and let's go do some sightseeing. And what happens is, if I'm teaching a workshop, say, at 3 o'clock, she wants to get up at, like, 9 o'clock and go and see, you know, a museum or go see some park, and I just want to stay in the hotel room and either watch TV or read. I mean, I'm not a total shut-in. I'll get up and I'll have breakfast. I'll find a breakfast place. I don't like to eat in the hotel because it's usually overpriced. And I'll certainly use the workout room. But for the most part, I really want to stay close to my hotel room. So staying in a hotel for as long as I was, 4 nights, all of a sudden, it was as if I was in a time machine and I was transported back to 4 years ago when I was single. And all the habits that I had to let go of when I got married came back. So my room is messy. There's like dirty clothes all over the floor and there's food wrappers and, it, you know, the bathrooms, you know, I've used every towel and it's wet and it's on the floor and it's just a pigsty. And then the masturbation started, like the chronic masturbation, like when I was single. You know, I used to masturbate a couple times a day. And now that I'm on the road, that starts up again, and I have to masturbate myself to sleep. And the other one that comes up is peeing in the bathroom sink. Now, before you pass judgment, I just want to explain. When I pee in the sink, there's a good reason why I'm doing it. I am talking on my cell phone. I really find it rude that if you're talking on the cell phone and somebody's going to the bathroom and you're hearing in the background pee going into the water, splashing into the water of the toilet. Now, it's never happened to me on the other side, but I'm doing this because I think it's the right thing to do. So I pee in the sink so you don't hear that sound. And then I turn the faucet on and let the water naturally flush the urine down the sink. No one is being harmed in this, and I think it's the right thing to do. You're really going to love this episode of Paul Britton. He's a great improviser. He's a great guy. Here it is. Enjoy it, the Paul Britton episode.
Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd. He's a nerd. Oh, yeah. Jimmy's a nerd. He's a nerd. Oh, yeah. Jimmy's a nerd. He's a nerd. Oh, yeah. Jimmy's a nerd. He's a nerd.
You said something very nice. We did a warm up. We all held hands. The Karen and who's the other music guy? Please help me out with this.
Joseph.
And you said thank you for teaching you the art of slow comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Your class I took way back a decade ago.
Yeah.
More than that.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, it's, do you still teach it the same way you did?
Yes.
And it's sort of just a separate class that a lot of people after they graduate, you know, finish the regular IO class is kind of like an elective thing.
Mm-hmm.
That people can take, and it's really great, and it's a lot of people who are just interested in learning more, a lot of really good people, and I just remember being
a
great class.
Well, you paid me a compliment,
class.
And I first of all, thank you. And it was so hard to take in. It was so hard. Are you good with compliments?
I think I'm okay. It was hard to just hear a compliment.
Oh yeah, it was painful.
What happens when you hear a compliment?
I shut down and I want to just negate.
You wish it didn't happen. You wish I never said it.
No, I'm glad you said it, but it's very, very hard just to take in.
I see.
You know?
I hear you.
So let's start with you for just a second here.
Do I need to talk like right into this? How does it? Okay.
Okay, great.
Back here?
We got it.
Okay. So growing up, Naperville, which is a suburb of Chicago.
Yes.
Tell us a little about Naperville.
It's a suburb of Chicago.
Okay.
And it's like, it's
is
like
how 30, the interview's going to go?
No, that was just fun. It's okay. Like, it's just west, about 30, 35 miles from Chicago. I feel like it's kind of like I think it maybe historically is even older than Chicago. It's just like a small farm town that eventually, as like the suburban sprawl of Chicago happened, it eventually kind of got subsumed by all of that. So it was probably like a small town in the 50s, and then by the 70s, it was like a suburb.
And so you're this kid who's watching a lot of stand-up, right?
Eventually. We, like, probably like by the time I was like 10 years old, was right when they started showing a lot of stand-up comedy on TV, like that late 80s stand-up comedy boom. Mm-hmm. So eventually it was like you could watch like six different, you know, shows
and
on the different cable networks.
And what was it when you were really young that you loved stand-up?
I just loved comedy, and I think I perceived that stand-up that I was watching as something different than like the sitcoms, which felt, I don't know if I would have said it at the time, but like there's like some kind of formula, but this was just like some guy or girl who wrote whatever they wanted and they were getting to perform it and it was on TV. And that was just really fascinating.
And who were the stand-ups that you really connected to?
Gosh, I mean, when I was really little, it was like Jerry Seinfeld would be on one of those shows before he had his show, or like Paul Reiser,
And you like analyze the comedy, right?
I don't know if a 10-year-old can analyze it, but I liked stuff and I didn't like other stuff. And then I was aware in my head that I was a 10-year-old who was liking stuff and not liking stuff.
So give me an example. You're watching Three's Company, which was a show you liked.
Sure.
And so what's going on in the 10-year-old's head?
Oh, I mean, with a show like that, I think it was just especially like, I just thought John Ritter was like the funniest guy mm-hmm. ever. And, you know, all this crazy physical comedy. I think that's what I loved about that. And, I mean, you had Don Knotts mm-hmm. as Mr. Furley. So there was just some pretty, like, big, crazy, funny characters on that show. So that's, I think that's what I loved about that.
And your uncle is Bob Newhart. And yes. when we were in Chicago,
yeah.
I didn't know this information. Thank right. God I didn't.
Right. But why thank God you didn't?
Because I would have just been, I would have tried to want to meet him, and it would have been crazy. Great. But I almost got the sense that you didn't want people to know that he was your uncle.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And what was the fear?
Well, it was, you know, when I was a kid, when I was a little kid, grade school, mm-hmm. junior high, even high school, people knew, and he had TV shows on the air in those days, and the other kids in my class and stuff knew that, but then they also just knew me from being, you know, in school with right. me every day, or being friends with me. Mm-hmm. But I realized, like, when I got to college, I went to University of Illinois, like okay. really big
school, yeah.
Big school, you meet so many more people and just like acquaintances and everything mm-hmm. like that. I feel like I just had like one friend in particular, just kind of like, maybe he was just kind of meathead-y dude. But like he would, you know, we'd be at a bar and he would introduce me to some other person he knew. And he'd be like, hey, this is my friend Paul. Do you know who his uncle is? It's Bob Newhart. And I started to feel like that's weird that A, he's like, doing that, it's like way more in the forefront of his mind uh-huh. than my own, just going through my life. Like, right. yeah, I have an uncle who lives in California. And then also those people he's introducing me to, like that's the one bullet point they know. That's the only thing they know about me. So when I got to Chicago and was, you know, getting into the improv community, I kind of realized that like I didn't want that to be the only thing people knew about. I didn't want to be compared to like a comedy legend when I'm like a sucky improviser trying to figure it out for years. So yeah, I didn't tell anyone.
Was there a little that, like, I'm going to make it on my own kind of thing?
I don't think that. I don't, I think I, having the benefit of not having the same last name uh-huh. as him, I could just, you know, do my own thing. And I would look at it as kind of a negative potentially. That.
In what way?
Just that I wouldn't want to, for people to like compare me to, you know, one of the greats when you're trying to figure out what it is you're doing, you know, or have that in their head subconsciously or something like that. You know?
So this is a totally unfair question. You don't have to answer
man.
It. Okay. You ready?
Okay.
Are you scared? Are you scared?
Okay. No. Let's,
okay, great. Did you look at your watch? How do you think that you are similar to what your uncle did?
How am I similar? You know, we were kind of talking about this before. I think that we, you know, just from knowing about him when he was growing up, just similarly had a fascination with comedians and comedy. You know, Bob and Ray were like a couple of his favorite people and Jack Benny and other comedians like that. So just recognizing like, just like internally that interested in comedy or just it was my favorite thing and he did too, and you know, so he in his young days just, you know, decided to, I'm gonna kind of put all my effort into doing this, creating my own material, when people didn't really do that in the late 50s, kind of like quit working your regular job mm-hmm. and try and do that and see if you can make it.
Did that pave the way with your parents? Like, okay,
go.
You know, your uncle made it. So
yeah, yeah.
So we're not gonna, you know, if we're gonna lay off Paul as he's taking improv.
Yeah, yeah. You know, my parents would have been happy no matter what I did. That's just how my parents are. But on top of it, you know, that's my mom's brother. So she, you know, she was aware of what, you know, his career was like. My dad. Was an art teacher. He did theater in Chicago back in the 60s, like comedy and theater and film and that's all stuff that my parents really love. So they were excited that I was doing that. You know,
I asked you earlier about if you've never asked him for any advice.
Not really, no. I haven't really.
So, like, when you were around him, do you ever get into conversation? I am a huge Bob Newhart fan. I told you this. Yeah. I studied him. I loved him. When I did improv, the first 6 years, I was just imitating Bob Newhart.
Really?
Yes. I loved him that much. I used to put a Walkman on when I was studying at the I.O. in the 86. Yeah. And so during the day, I would go on walks, and I would have his old, like, the button-down mind, all of those things. And I read anything I could about Bob Newhart.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever get in conversations about comedy or theory or any of that kind of stuff?
Not really. Not, like, theory or stuff like that. Because I think, you know, it's not like he went to school and studied comedy theory either. He did and wrote the stuff that he thought was funny and then was just like in his own voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think without even thinking about that or thinking about getting advice from him or anybody else, I feel like I never ask like even, you know, teachers. I mean, probably with improv, that's something
Why
you have to
is
learn
that?
More.
Why but, is that, Paul?
But no, in terms of writing or creating a character or something like that, it's really, it just has to be whatever I really like in order for me to do it. So in the sense that, you know, if I had I was scripting a show and had a director, I mean, I'd be getting advice that way or working on something like that. But I wouldn't have ever asked him for advice. I would have felt strange. I did, like, when I did my Sex Ed Vincent solo show, I
that
took
was
it out
at I.O. in Chicago.
I did in Chicago, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I took it out to L.A. If it was a different show, if it wasn't so much about, like, sex. Like,
well,
if it
he's
wasn't
like
so
an old
that,
school Catholic, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, he would like it and he would enjoy it anyway. But just, like, I would have felt weird. Like, I didn't invite any of my relatives.
Okay.
But if it was a show about something else, I totally would have invited him and I would have loved to hear anything that
I love that character, Sex Ed Vincent.
Oh, thanks so much. Thanks a lot.
And the first time I think I saw it was on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah.
And I'd heard about your one-man show, and it was really great and all that stuff. Of course, I didn't get to it, so I'm sorry. How did that character come about?
I was in the cast of a show called The Late Night Late Show at I.O.
Okay.
Back then, I don't know if you
Jordan wasn't that. In that. Jordan Klepper.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
he was
on. He's the correspondent on The Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love Jordan.
Yes, me too. He was the original. It was like a fake talk show.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan was the original host of it. His name was Mark Luge. I just like to get that out there because that's a great name. His character's name was Mark Luge, but it was like a fake talk show, and then there was. Also, the guests were real people from Chicago, you know, writers or, you know, different people who live in Chicago, athletes. And then there would be a character bits and all sorts of different bits would happen and script a brand new show every week. They started doing that. It was and did it for like a year and then asked me to join the cast. Really just amazing people. And I would just go and watch it because it was one of the funniest things, you know, in Chicago for sure. So so Sex Ed was just somehow one of our pitch meetings, like that was like gonna be a segment.
Because there was a whole writing staff on that show, right?
It was like people were writers and performers, mm-hmm. kind of all of us did all those things. Sarah Haskins was the director of it. And I don't even remember what the overall show was, the conceit of that particular episode, but there was gonna be this crappy sex ed instructor. So, you know, we kind of riffed different ideas for that, and then if that was the thing you were going to do in the show, then you had the week to take it, you know, and what does that character sound like? What, you know, what is his attitude
like?
So
it was almost like a challenge. It was like, okay, go and work on this and come back.
It was just what we did every week,
right.
You know? So, and then you write out, you know, You write out the entire piece and then go perform it. So I did it on that show, and I loved doing it, and it seemed to be a real big hit with the audience right away, and I think I did it maybe one other time. And then after we stopped doing Late Night Late Show, it just occurred to me, like, this is kind of really well set up for a solo show in that the show could just be this guy's seminar, you know, and the audience are ostensibly, you know, the paying customers for that show. And I can just do it, you know, direct to the audience. So, so that's where that came about. And I
can you just give me a little sample for people that don't know Sex Ed,
oh boy.
Vincent?
let's see. Well, he sort of just talks like this, and he's from a fictional island somewhere in New York, in the area, that would, fingers crossed, one day become the eighth borough. If you ever get up that high, but who knows? Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit.
It was, but that's from your pure imagination. You're not pulling that from your parents or anybody else, because your parents were school teachers.
Yeah. No, definitely not my parents. No, probably just some kind of amalgamation of like the different comedy characters or like real life people that I've seen.
And is that how you approach most of your characters? It's like, here's this idea.
I guess it's different a bit every time. You know, with that one, it was kind of different because it was the sort of the premise of it was already sort of set up. Mm-hmm. This guy's a sex education something or other that he's not really qualified to be. And so kind of because of that, because the subject matter was sex, uh-huh. I wanted to make him, he wears an Argyle sweater. And I wanted for it not to be that like he's a perv, because mm-hmm. I just felt like that's kind of a very obvious way to go. So he's just a kind of very earnest, very well-meaning, kind of a square, you know, guy, and totally unqualified, but just feels like it's kind of his mission, and he's there to help people with his wisdom.
And so you end up at Iowa, which is pretty much where you started and you mm-hmm. stayed, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did you end up at IO in Chicago?
I think it was basically, after I graduated college, I always intended, but probably also to get involved with comedy somehow. I knew of Second City. In fact, I had like cousins who were, like when I was a kid, my cousins were like grown-ups with jobs already. And some of them did like theater and stuff like that. They'd gone through like the Second City program when I was like a little kid. So I was aware that was like a thing that, you know, you could do one day. So that was probably in the back of my mind, but also, I lost my train of thought. But so after college, I did a bunch of backpacking and traveling. I had studied abroad in Spain and was a Spanish major and really just loved traveling around and had some other friends who similarly did, so we decided after college to go to South America for like 4 months and then came home and saved up money, and then I went down to Central America and Mexico and made my way back. And sort of while I was doing that, a couple of the friends of mine from high school had moved to the city, and they'd taken some writing classes at Second City, and then they had just started IO classes. And sort of right when I was getting back home and then just about to move to Chicago, this would have been like October of 01, they were in classes at IO and they were just really raving about it. And so I think I signed up before I ever even saw a show there, and then went and saw a show and, you know, just, you know, it's kind of mind-blowing.
Do you remember the show you saw that
yeah,
was mind-blowing?
Yeah, I saw Armando, the Armando Diaz show. So it's all these sort of, all the all-stars
right.
of Chicago, people who are on the Second City stages and veteran people, you know. I remember, like, Noah Gregoropoulos was in the show, and Peter Gwynn, and TJ Jagodowski, and Abby Scheer, and Alex Fendrich, and it was like the funniest and smartest stuff I'd seen, and on top of it, they were making it all up, so it was like, I just couldn't.
So you see the show.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah.
What do you say? Oh my God, what did I get into?
No, well, like, I think it was like, I want to spend a lot of time here, and hopefully a long time from now I can, you know, be, you know, a fraction of as good at this as these people are. But this is like, this is a place I want to hang out and absorb as much as I can.
So then what happens in your first class at IO?
My first class at IO, Joe Canali was my teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's laughing. Buckman's laughing. I remember I was real nervous, as I'm sure most people are. and just did like one scene. I think I got a laugh or two in it, and that was exciting. I don't remember too much other than that. Like, I think it's this sort of scene where like they give you a sort of a situation that is kind of ripe for conflict, but you have to not argue.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was like I was a burglar and, no, that was someone else in the class. I think we were two people who both wanted to buy the same dog. It was kind of a strange premise, but that's what it was. But we couldn't argue over.
You had to just agree to buying the dog.
Yeah, or just, you know, try to
get
through.
So you had that first class, and then how'd you feel after that?
Good. Mm-hmm. Good-ish, or, you know, right. Like, it's, you know, it.
Are my questions annoying?
No.
Okay, all right.
No, it's just tough to know. It's so long ago, but, yeah, I mean, you feel like this is going to be a long process until you really know what you're doing. But.
So then you end up on a team called Rattlesnake High School.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a great, great, great team. And Michael Patrick O'Brien, who is on Saturday Night Live, mm-hmm. was a writer and now a player.
Mm-hmm.
He was your coach.
Yes.
When I was at IO during those times, I mean, he was like looked up to as almost a god is an exaggeration, but people had a lot of respect for him.
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn from him?
Gosh, so much. He's really, as a performer and a writer, just really, really, I think, fearless and just very, very committed in improv, in sketch, in everything, in comedy, and I really respected that and loved watching him as a performer and everything, and always he was always someone who like could inspire you. A thing that I always remember was like I think I'd done my sex ed show, I think maybe he was on the main stage, but he was also doing his own solo show and always writing his own solo material, and this was probably stuff maybe that wouldn't have gone into a main stage show, and that was just a great reminder of like of what I always wanted to do, which was create my own stuff, and you know, I didn't see anyone else in Chicago during my time who was like more committed to doing that.
And he had an incredible work ethic, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then so you're on
better than me.
Pardon?
Better than all of us.
Yeah. You don't think you have a good work ethic?
Somewhat. I don't know.
Okay.
So, maybe I'm a bad judge of that. I don't know.
Okay. Because I always thought that you had a very good work ethic. I don't think you get hired, and I want to talk about the process. So
yeah.
On Saturday Night Live, if you don't have a good work
sure,
ethic.
Sure, sure.
Okay.
Sure,
so this Rattlesnake High School breaks up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a time where you're kind of limbo at IO.
I mean, I was doing a lot of other stuff at IO. Right. I was on another Herald team, and I'm trying to remember the exact time frame. I don't know if I finished doing that sex ed show. Somewhere in there, I started doing a two-person show with Jet
Eveleth
as well. So I was involved with lots of stuff.
So
yeah.
How do you get the audition for Saturday Night Live?
They come most summers to see a showcase, you know, at IO, and mm-hmm. they see the Second City shows. So they were coming that year, and I was in the showcase.
Now, how did you get into the showcase? Because as we all know, did Sharna ask you?
Oh,
you?
No, that's funny. I didn't even recall that. I think the year before they had, Sharna's going to hate me. The year before, oftentimes for those showcases, it would just be a lot of improvisers kind of thrown together in a group, and they just improvised. And the year before, they had done it such that it was just kind of like you're up there doing 5 minutes of your own material, characters,
right.
what have you. And the year before, I wasn't in that showcase, and I kind of heard about it maybe the next day or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the only time ever, I wrote out a long email to Sharna that was basically, you know, I should have been in that showcase.
Okay.
How'd
she respond?
She was like, I understand, sorry. And, you know, in that situation, she's got a million people berating
right.
her. And I'm
still ask her to be in the showcase.
Sure.
Yeah,
I understand. I'm not the person who is, like, banging down the door saying, you know, That's not my personality.
Right, and that's what I think is interesting about you. You aren't somebody who is, I'm going to ask my uncle for advice. There's a very laid-back quality to you.
You know, I think I don't like the opposite quality in other people. So somehow in my head, you know, if I were the person making decisions, like the worst, you know, the last thing you would want to do to convince me would be, you know, kind of throw yourself and say me, you know.
You don't like to do that at all.
No, I'm saying whatever tactic that would be like to try and force yourself on whatever position, mm-hmm. if I were the person in the decision-making position, mm-hmm. I would say, stop it. I'll make the decision. You're not going to persuade me.
Okay, you know? What about the squeaky wheel gets oil, especially in L.A.? Are you learning?
Could be. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Yeah, it's not my personality.
Okay.
But no, I you know, that does happen, I'm sure.
But don't look for me for any advice on that.
So then the next year...
Do you have to go to Sharon and say, put me in, or did she remember?
No, she
another email?
No, I had done that the year before, and then she put me in and the showcase. And
do you remember what you did in that showcase?
I did. I just did Sex Ed Vincent, and I did another character that was in the sketch show that Jet and I were doing at that time.
Okay.
So did those two characters.
And when you go in, because I always go in with no confidence whatsoever. You know, it's a long shot, you know,
which
is why I don't book anything. But what is your mindset when you go in with something like that? Is it to get the job or is it just to do a good audition?
It's to do a good audition. And, you know, that's a situation where... It's different from most auditions because you're going in with your material. Mm-hmm. You wrote it, so I'm the best person to perform this material because I wrote it and it's what I want to do. So you can just be happy about doing that material and showing that off. I mean, I was definitely still like nervous about doing it well and having the timing go right, you know, just... You've only got 5 minutes, you know, really
so
do
the
your
timing,
best version.
So the best version does happen. The timing does go right. And then what happens? So you're in Chicago, you audition at I.O., and then they fly you out there, right?
Yeah. They fly a handful of us out from Chicago.
Do you remember who else was there that year?
Jet was there, Vanessa.
Uh-huh. Vanessa Bayer.
Vanessa Bayer. Sam Richardson, Chris Witaski, Tom Flanagan. I don't want to forget just like one person. But that's most of.
And so you fly out there and then you audition.
Mm-hmm.
And what's that like?
It's very surreal because you're on the, you're on the eighth floor where the studio is, and when you do your audition, you're on the stage where you see the host give the monologue.
That whole set looks like a subway station.
Right.
Oh my god.
You're on that. That, you know, in my case, I've been watching since I was nine, mm-hmm. you know, pretty religiously.
Had that always been a goal of yours?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah, okay. I mean, that was the job I wanted when I was 9 years old, mm-hmm. so I'm glad I got to do it. I think there was 20-some people auditioning that day, and you wait in one of the dressing rooms. I think I was in Fred Armisen's dressing room, which was
and what
cool.
what's going on in your head?
Same kind of thing. Just like I know it's my material. I just want to do it well and not forget stuff. it's just that. So again, kind of, you know, definitely some amount of nervousness, but. Just really focused on doing it well, not what is the outcome going to be.
How do you do that? Because I still haven't figured it out.
I don't know. I think it's maybe a different mindset when you're going in auditioning for something, you know, for a script that you're given,
right.
A TV show, something like that, because you potentially are concerned with what is it exactly that they want, and am I doing the character how they you know, want it to do, and the guessing game that can go on in your head. But when it's your own material, you know, it's you know, you're not doing it wrong. You can't be.
I could find 10 ways in my head if I was doing my own material. So you do it, it goes well, this audition. And then what's the next step?
So then I remember I stayed in New York for a couple more days, and I was going to my friend's wedding in Connecticut. And then,
do I know the person?
No, not an improv person.
Okay.
A friend from college. And then I got a call saying that they wanted me to come back for a meeting the next week.
And what are you thinking now when they say a meeting next week?
That was like, I was very excited.
Okay.
Then. You never know when they're actually hiring people,
right,
or when they're just having meetings with people or anything like that, but that was very exciting, you know. I didn't, you know, that's got to be like kind of the final
step. So when do you meet Lauren?
So that was, you know, a few days after that. Was back in New York. Met Lorne.
Now, did he make you wait outside the? Because I've read stuff about this, where
he made
people outside in the waiting room for like an hour or an hour and a half, something crazy like that.
And what? This wasn't like that. There was like, I think there were six of us there having meetings with Steve Higgins, one of the producers, and Seth Meyers, the head writer at the time, and with Lorne.
Now, are you going in your head, okay, there's six people, there's only two slots, or you don't give a shit?
Well, you you don't know if they're hiring anybody.
Okay.
Or you don't know any of that.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm glad this never happened to me, because I'm so fucked up, you know? It's like, you're just like, oh, well, whatever. I'd be like, okay, that person, and I try to figure it out.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But actually, I'd met him the night before. They had me come out and have drinks at like a restaurant with a bunch of.
Now this isn't the story, because Chris Wataski told us a story where
Lorne Michaels,
he's out with a lot of people. He's been called there like three times, I think, three or four.
Okay.
Times.
Yeah.
And there was one night where Lorne orders French fries. Well, okay. You weren't there at that night.
No.
There's a great story.
I want to hear this French fries story.
He's out there, and he and Chris does such a good. I'm not even going to do it justice. Chris, so Lorne Michaels is there. He's holding court. He's got a lot of people from Chicago. I think Carissa Bareka is there. A lot of, there's like six people, and somebody orders French fries, and Lorne says, "You know why I'm not going to order just a basket? Because if I order just a basket, everybody's going to want some. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to order everybody a basket." I love that story. I do not do that justice, but I love that story.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Did he pull you in and go, "Paul, can I tell you about French fries?"
He did. He never mentioned French fries to me once. No, we. I was out there, was, you know, the producer and some of the other people from talent, and maybe a couple of writers were there. And Lorne came, I think, as I recall, he was returning from a Yankees game, and it was just me and all of these people, and that was another sort of tense kind
right.
of thing where they're just kind of getting to know you and asking questions, and you're just trying to be a normal person, but your heart rate's probably a little high because, you know, you're in an Italian restaurant with Lorne Michaels. And
don't order the calamari. I'll tell you why. When did you get the call?
So then that was that night, and then the next day was the meetings I was referring to, and then there were six of us in there, and
someone's home.
My uncle's here. He's just fixing the air conditioning.
Okay. And so I went and had the meetings with Steve Higgins, and then we just waited around, and then eventually I went and had the meeting in Lauren's office, and he hired me then. So
he just is like, "Oh, you got the job?" He's like
he,
that?
He said, he didn't say you got the job, but something.
But you
like
knew when you left you had the job.
Oh, yes, yes. He was clear.
Because I would have been like, "Oh, did he really say that?" Because it would be so surreal. Like, did he really say that? Like, I'm the type who like would have to double check. Lorne, just did you? Okay, I just
yeah, checking. Yeah, he did. He
And what are you
then.
Feeling at that point?
It, like, I mean, that's the craziest moment, you know, probably of your life. Because, you know, you're just in his office and, I mean, it's just surreal. Your head's just kind of spinning.
Mm-hmm.
You can't catch up to that in one moment or one evening. Like, okay, I'm going to
I got to go back and pack up my apartment and move to New York.
Like, and like the people that you were on with were like, they, some of them were just leaving, but they, I mean, it was like, they had been there for a while, and it was like the, let me look at my, it was Fred Armisen, Bill mm-hmm. Hader, Andy Samberg, Jason Sudeikis, Kristen Wiig. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What did you learn from those guys?
I mean, they're just amazing performers, and there's no other show, you know, on planet Earth like doing that live show. There's nothing like it. So just trying to watch what they do and in their performance and in their writing and pick up little things here and there, and just like it's you know, you get there and it's your whole life, obviously, because it's, you know, you're there.
Did anyone put you under their wing and say, "Hey, new kid, this is what happened"?
Everyone was just kind of like, everyone's very welcoming. You know, I, like, Hader took us all us new folks out to dinner our first week, and
did he
like,
give you any advice?
I can't remember anything in particular, but just like basically like the, you know, ask me anything. The door's always open. You know, ask any questions.
Did you ask anything?
Not at that moment. Okay. I mean, it's kind of like, you don't know, the show hadn't started yet. You don't know what to ask until the show's already started. I can remember a thing where like I'd done something in rehearsal, and Sudeikis took me aside, and he was like, "Hey, I could tell you were getting like a lot of notes, and I could tell you were kind of like, you know, getting that dry mouth feeling and kind of, you know, not knowing what to do." And he was like, "Just remember, do what got you here. You know how to be funny. Don't try to over-focus on doing all the notes and everything. Just do what you naturally do and just be funny and get the laugh, you know." And I remember that was really helpful in that moment.
What was like a surreal moment? Like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here. This,
I mean, there's so many. I would like, you know, I got to be on stage with Paul McCartney. That was insane. You know,
like, there's, what is he like?
He was.
You're not going to tell me he's the
nicest
jerk.
Guy. No. Okay. Okay. We were rehearsing this thing. It was like the opening monologue. Paul Rudd was the host, mm-hmm. and Paul McCartney was the musical guest. And the bit was Simon Rich wrote, which is so funny. It was like, there's like lines of people down the street chanting Paul, and Paul Rudd assumed it was all for him, and then Paul McCartney, you know, kind of corrects him, and they realize that. And then I come out like a idiot, and I'm like, everyone is chanting Paul for this person who's been on TV for 6 weeks. You know, so that was an amazing thing to get to do. But I remember, so we were rehearsing it, and they were just kind of changing my line a bit and say this and that, and I think I said something like, it's like Paul Britton and the mother freaking house, and then they maybe took that out, and then Paul McCartney was like, "No, I think you should keep in the mother freaking, you know, it gives you something, it gives you spot." Like, he told them, and then they're like, "All right, great." Paul McCartney says,
"But isn't that?"
And then we're walking out of rehearsal, and I'm just leaving the studio there, and he tracks me down and like taps me on the shoulder, and he's like, "You know, I just thought that was, it was really good, so I wanted them to keep that in." Like, "You're going above and beyond, man." Like, I can't believe it. Yeah. So that was, you know, that was crazy.
But in the show, the host has a veto power, right? If they don't want to do something or they like something.
I think so. I mean, all that stuff happens, you know. You know, the cast isn't really involved,
right.
You know, those decisions are made, and I'm sure what the host wants to do is definitely one of those factors.
Who was the best host you ever worked with, you thought?
I definitely can't pick one, because it was...
Who was the biggest jerk? You probably have that one.
No, really.
Really?
We were really lucky with amazing hosts when I was there.
Would, like, you hear people from the other cast going, "I'll tell you who's the biggest jerk"? Do you ever hear that? You don't have to name names, but did people ever say, "Oh, I'll tell you who's a pain"?
I think maybe like a couple, yeah, here and there. And I think just from reading the books, I gather Steven Seagal was a handful.
Right.
He's kind of legendarily a tough one. But for the most part, people really, you know, get on board and go with the flow, because they, you know, they're about to go on live television. Many of them are not comedians. They need to trust, you know, what's going, everybody else. They don't want to make a bunch of enemies before that, I don't think.
What's the favorite thing you did on that show?
I loved doing Sex Ed Vincent. Mm-hmm. I loved, you know, taking that character from Chicago and getting to have that, you know, be on national television. That was awesome.
And those were taped, as I remember, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which was cool. So they had, you know, kind of their own style to them, that kind of real low budget bootleg quality that is would definitely be Sex Ed Vincent's version of things. That was great. I got to do another piece that I had auditioned with that was just like this Spanish. We made it so it was like Spanish language ESPN Deportes. So it was all in Spanish, except they would, like, you know, every 20th word was in English. We'd like, you know, do like the ESPN style catchphrases would be in English, but it would be just, if you don't understand Spanish, it's just a string of Spanish, and then like, Snowpocalypse! or whatever, while we're showing highlights. And that was super fun. I did that with Gwyneth Paltrow, who also spoke Spanish. Mm-hmm. So those were a couple.
Are you ready to improvise now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
let's
great.
Do it.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to take a suggestion. What do you usually like to take?
Anything, just a word. Anything.
A word. Can we have a word, please?
Barn door.
What was it?
Barn door.
Barn door. Now, when you hear barn door, what do you hear?
I guess it's like a picture of a barn door appears in my head. and then I realize I didn't grow up on a farm. Okay, what am I going to do with barn door? It kind of immediately evokes a sort of farm barn setting. So that's the first things going through my head.
Okay.
How about you?
I hear barn door, and the first thing that goes to me is when you were a kid, your barn door is open. Do you ever remember
that?
Oh,
yeah, like your fly is open.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, okay, could we start a scene that way? It doesn't seem like this is the strongest initiation. So I would let that go most nights. Then barn door, your barn door is over. Maybe somebody who's like self-conscious. You know, like if I embody...
They're worried that their barn door is open?
They're worried that
worried something is wrong.
Something is wrong.
And everyone else can see it.
Right. Mickey!
Hey.
Mickey!
Hey.
See you. Good to see you.
How are you?
Good. Are you, the father, the priest let me back here.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
You
look great, man.
Did you tell the priest to let you back here?
Yeah. I told him I was the best man. Huh?
No, you're not the best
man. I know, I told him that.
Okay, fine.
What are you so nervous about?
What do you mean, what am I nervous? I'm getting married.
I know,
what
she's beautiful.
Yeah.
She's a beautiful girl.
Yeah, God.
Where's the reefer, man?
Huh?
The reefer.
Huh?
You always got reefer on.
Not
you.
Today.
Okay, man. Okay. Don't
mess up my headspace right now.
Okay, man, you got like a Xanax or something in here?
No, I don't have anything.
What the fuck
anything.
Am I
it's
doing
in the
back here? It's in the
you
hotel.
Came back here, that's why you're
right,
back.
I came back here to chill you out, man. Stay cool, man.
Okay.
I'm here.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Why I came here.
All right.
He came here to make you feel comfortable.
Okay, all right.
She looks so hot, man. Sarah looks so fucking hot, man. If you weren't marrying her, I would,
No! No, you wouldn't. She wouldn't marry you, okay?
Alright.
Why would you say that right now?
Because
you did an air hump gesture.
Yeah.
Because about I'm to be wife.
I'm in the house of worship, alright? I'm not gonna say the F word. You know what? There's gotta be some sacrament wines here, don't you think?
Don't,
by these priests?
Don't.
This is what
just
they do.
Wait till the reception, like everyone.
Okay? I just want a little nip. I got a little edge on you. You need a little doom, okay?
Why didn't you bring a flask or something?
I should have. You know what? I called you a couple times. You never returned my phone calls.
I'm not answering my phone today.
That's stupid. Your best friend Nick, you're not gonna answer the phone.
I'm supposed to answer a bunch of phone calls.
Yeah.
On this day?
Yes.
No.
I'm gonna find some wine in here.
No.
All right, here I got it. I got some. Come on.
Fine. Just pour it and we'll get it done with, and you can put it away, and hopefully the priest doesn't walk in.
I hope the priest doesn't walk in.
When you got married the first time,
that was good, wasn't it?
Did you remember?
That was a hell of a wedding, man.
Oh, no, I was.
That
I was,
speech you said is amazing.
Well, were you nervous?
I was.
Were you nervous about messing up the vows?
No, I was drunk. And then I took a couple. I took muscle relaxers. I didn't. The whole thing was just like a big blur.
Mixed booze and pills.
Yeah. What are you worried about?
What, stealing wine in a church?
I'm not stealing. How much are you?
Isn't that one of the commandments?
No, it's not. Okay.
Thou shalt not steal, but wine is okay.
Okay. Now listen.
From the church.
Are you going to give the priest some money? Right. The best man is going to give the priest some money.
Okay.
You know what that's for? It's to cover the wine.
Okay, fine. You do that. You slip the priest some money during the ceremony.
I'll
right?
do
That's
that.
Classy.
Jesus, man.
Very classy.
You're supposed to be happy. Today's supposed to be the happiest day
I'll
of your life.
I'll be happy when it's done tomorrow or later today. I'm not happy right now. Ah.
That's good. Great. That is good.
Great.
That is so good.
Wipe them out. Wipe it out. Okay, and put the bottle. Did you put the bottle away?
I put the bottle down. What are you so paranoid about? Yeah, these priests, all they do, you know, they're fucking little boys half the time, right? I said fucking.
Stop it with that.
What do you mean stop it with that? Hey, I want to tell you something. When we were in the sixth grade,
what?
Father McMurray, he touched me inappropriately. I've not told anybody this.
Are you serious?
I'm totally serious. That's why
I've Father McMurray.
Father McMurray. Oh, everybody loved the most popular priest. Yeah.
Okay. Here at the church?
Here at the church.
When you say inappropriately, what?
Look, I don't want to drag this
up.
It's painful enough.
All right. I just wanted there was some kind of confusion.
Okay, I was doing a midnight mass, right?
Okay.
That was the mass everybody wanted to do.
Yeah.
I come in here about 11:45, right? He's in here. I'm in here. He's like, hey, why don't you get your, the cassock we put on?
Yeah.
And then he rubs up against me.
Okay. Like he bumped into you?
No. He, like, rubbed up against me. And then he tried to kiss me.
What?
Yeah.
He tried to kiss me,
okay? This does not leave the rectory, all right?
I'm not going to say anything. Jeez.
I wasn't going to tell anybody. You know why I said it? To make sure you get more relaxed.
Well, I don't know if that did it. Now I'm thinking, why am I... I'm having second thoughts about this entire place. You know, about this entire church here.
You can't back out of it. This is the church.
Well, but now I got that thought in my mind.
Good. That's a good thought to have in your mind.
That's a good thought to have in my mind?
Because now
Bob McMurray brushing up against you and trying to kiss
you. It happened to me. It didn't happen to you. Thank God it didn't happen to you.
Yeah, I guess.
All right?
Okay.
Just keep that in your mind.
Keep that in your mind,
yes. So you don't focus on Sarah and
not going through
with this.
Okay.
Okay?
No, I'm going through
Aren't
with
you
it.
Glad I came back here? Aren't I like a ray of sunshine?
I don't know. No, I wouldn't say ray of sunshine. No, you're a ray of something. No.
You know what we need? We need a little more celebration.
Fine. Fine.
You better... I wouldn't be pacing back and forth because you're going to ruin the crease in your pants.
I'm not worried about the crease in my pants.
I am totally surprised that you didn't hear about Father McMurray. I'm sure I wasn't the only one.
I mean, you just said you didn't tell anybody else.
I didn't tell anybody, but I'm sure other kids got... I don't know, which one is yours? I don't want to get germs. Which one is yours?
I don't remember. They both look the same. I don't know. You choose. You go ahead, choose.
I'm paralyzed now. I don't know which one to choose.
Get two new glasses in. Come on. All right, fine.
You're going to do two new glasses. Oh, my God. Look at this guy. He's doing two new glasses. Oh, look at him.
Go.
We could get in trouble. We could be thrown to the Vatican. All right, here we go. There we go. New glasses. There we go. New glasses. They should have an ice machine here. Don't you think? It'd be really nice. For all the money we give to
the
church, we should have an ice machine. There you go.
You heard about other
I'm just
boys?
Saying. I'm, I don't know. I'm sure there was
other. Did you hear about any other?
I might have, yeah. My support group. All right, let's go. Here we go.
What?
Aren't you going to make... I'm going to make a toast to you.
Okay.
All right.
All right, fine.
To 5 years of incredible bliss between you and Sarah.
Okay, you said unincredible. What does that mean?
That means that it's so incredible, it's unbelievable. Unincredible.
I think the un cancels out the in. Just so it just makes it credible, like believable. The opposite of unbelievable. It's
why do you
believable.
Always have to be the smart one? Why well, do you always have to... You're trying to correct me every time.
Well, I'm trying to figure out what you're saying. Why didn't you just say incredible?
All right, incredible. You're going to have incredible 5 years, all right?
What do you mean just 5 years?
That's a five-year cycle. I'm on my fourth marriage, right?
Yeah.
Every 5 years. You're
well, you know what? I'm not trying to repeat what you've done, all right? I'm trying to make this one and that's it.
All right. Incredible lifetime together.
Thank you.
All right.
All right.
Great.
Cheers.
Cheers. Oh, my God. That is so good. That is so incredibly good. Okay. There we go.
Okay.
Why are you putting it away?
Let's just put all this stuff away, okay? I just don't feel comfortable. We did two drinks, and I think that's enough, right?
Right.
I'm feeling more relaxed.
Good.
I'm feeling more relaxed.
Good.
Job is done.
Good, good.
Best man, job is done. Did you come back here because you're upset I didn't make you the best man?
I may have a little problem with it, sure. And I was going to wait and put that into my speech, but now that we're here, yes, I have a problem. We've known each other since third grade.
Uh-huh.
I've been there for you every time you needed something.
Okay.
You were the best man in my first three weddings. The only reason you weren't the fourth time, because you were out of town.
Well?
I'm hurt.
I'm sorry. I just didn't know if I could trust you.
And?
And I might have been right. I don't know. You have been a best man before.
Yeah.
You were best man at Tommy's wedding.
Tommy, yeah.
And how did that go?
All right.
All right?
Okay. So you know what? I got the churches screwed up.
Yeah.
All right. Big deal. All right.
Yes, big deal.
I made it to the reception.
Not the sarcastic version of big deal. Literally, big deal. You went the wrong church.
Right. But I showed up at the reception.
And
that's all that matters.
And where were the rings?
Okay. So they got the rings after at the reception.
They
all
got
right?
the rings at the reception, and the best man wasn't there for the ceremony.
Right. Right.
Right.
I wasn't going to do that to you. I like you better than Tommy.
You probably thought you weren't going to do it to Tommy, but you did it to Tommy.
All
right,
so I was hungover. Why you
exactly.
why you on my ass, all right?
I'm just saying. Did you consider that a successful best man experience?
I did, because
you
I'm
did.
Not negative
you
like you are. Yeah, I look at the positive.
You know what? I thought I was doing you a favor. I wasn't giving you a bunch of extra responsibilities. Being the best man, you could just show up, have fun at the reception, do your toast, and that would be it.
Okay. I love you like a brother. All
I
right?
love you like a brother too.
All right? So brothers don't do this stuff to each other.
I think this is exactly what brothers do to each other.
How was that for you?
I enjoyed it. I really liked it, the more kind of discoveries we made as it went on, kind of what, you know, our history was together.
Right.
I wasn't sure at first if we were, if you were like an older uncle, relative type
right.
person, or if
How
we were
How old are you in real life?
37.
Okay, and I'm 50, so I don't know. I always get very self-conscious about like, oh, is it okay to play your friends or whatever?
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah, yeah.
So you liked the discovery.
Mm-hmm.
What else did you like about it?
Having that, you know, once we came out that we've been friends since like third grade, having that potential for just a huge amount of personal history together,
mm-hmm.
And then the ability to just kind of throw out any detail of,
mm-hmm.
of stuff that might have happened to us. So.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably where, like, the thought that you've fucked up being a best man before would have come from. Just, and also just coming from the vibe that your character had.
Right. I don't know where that, I mean, character I'm familiar with. I don't know where that came from tonight. I just, you know, what do you think we could have done differently?
Early on, I felt like I was probably a bit hesitant. I mean, that was partly the character who was nervous about getting married, but then maybe that crossed over into the improviser, not actively making a lot of choices early.
Right.
Which I felt like you were really pushing the scene.
Right.
Which was good.
I could have listened a little better. I was getting excited, and I would have liked to have taken in more that you were giving me, you know? Because I think I really liked the relationship that we had. Do you think the scene was going forward, or do you think we were butting heads a lot in the scene?
I liked that we were butting heads because it felt like that was sort of the game or the thing of these two guys who know each other so well. So it wasn't the kind of butting heads that grinds the scene to a halt. It was the way these two guys would argue or bust each other's.
Right. So
balls. It was organic to the character.
Right. I mean, how do we keep it going forward in something like that?
Right. Like, I guess it would depend on sort of what the context of the show is. Mm-hmm. Are we playing different characters? Are we going to see? Is the entire show going to be just all of that time leading up until the wedding? Are we going to see the wedding? Are we going to see the rest of the night?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to play, you know, additional characters other than these two?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to see the priest actually come in and see the wine out and that sort of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
But we could have just continued to sort of discover more stuff about, you know,
our relationship.
Our relationship history.
What about when I revealed that I had gotten abused by the priest?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. What's so funny?
Just, I mean, that was a bold move and potentially, I mean, it's always
right.
We're doing comedy. Is this?
Right.
Where's the line? I guess it would be like, what's the goal of the show or the scene?
Mm-hmm.
Should we be trying to play this for laughs, or is this just a hard hitting dramatic scene now?
Mm-hmm. How do you think we did in that?
I think we kind of did fine. We treated it seriously. I mean, you could have gone either way, and I didn't know what way you wanted to choose.
Which way? What's the other way?
When I asked, what do you mean by inappropriately? It could have been all in your head, and you could have revealed that whatever it is he did, you know, yeah, he shoved me in the back. I thought it was inappropriate.
Right.
Or whatever.
Let's just try that part. We'll stay in the chat. Okay. Great. Yeah, go. He shoved me in the back. It was totally inappropriate.
Yeah.
I was a 12-year-old boy. You don't shove a 12-year-old boy.
Okay, but yeah, but a lot of, I mean, you know, our teachers back in those days, they used to hit us with rulers and stuff like that. You know, that's inappropriate. You understand when you say a priest touched me inappropriately, what the other person thinks you're saying? You know, there's a different connotation of the word inappropriate in that situation.
So you're taking his side.
I'm not taking his side. I'm saying, when you say that, I thought he tried to have sex with you or something.
It could have led to that. You never know. I mean,
A guy pushing you in the back, that's what
that's
foreplay?
How many times have you been to a rock concert and someone pushes you? You know what they want? They want to fuck you.
That's how you take that?
Yeah.
Okay, it hasn't worked out that way for me, I guess.
Okay, great. So we could have gone that way. All right, so I really love this part of the show where, like, we can reenact it.
Yeah.
Because then it makes
you never get that chance in an improv
show. You don't.
The audience won't indulge you as much.
Right.
Guys, can we get a redo?
Yeah. We really meant to go this way. As they're leaving. Come on back.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to turn the house lights on, and we've got questions for Paul. So let me just see if we can see. Oh, great. So if you got a question for Paul, let's just raise your hand, and this is a great opportunity to ask a question. All right? Yeah, right here.
So, like, with Sex at Vincent, I mean, you've had it for a while. How does it? Mm-hmm. How do you, like, keep on developing it without kind of, like, running over old material? And, like, how does that process work out for you, like, make it fresh?
It's just a really fun character to play. I haven't been doing that a lot recently, but I enjoy going back to it for sure. And whenever I do it, I do a thing at the end of the show that is basically like this. I let the audience ask questions, and then I can just improvise. So that's completely new every time I do that. And when I would do the show originally, the stage show, I would throw in different things, potentially different each week, like maybe if there's something in the news that I just got so comfortable doing that character that he could expound on whatever topic and it would be ridiculous. So it's just fun to improvise in that
character. Do you ever do that in public? Like, just play the character? Like, when you go
into... Just, like, at a restaurant?
Yeah, just to play around. Or you're driving the car and you talk in that character.
Oh, like, to myself, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
With kind of all different characters, I'll do that. Uh-huh. Stuff that I'm working on or potentially new ideas. Yeah, I think I do that in my apartment. Mm-hmm. I've often wondered, like, my neighbors, people in apartments next to me, just hear a crazy person next door, like, yelling stuff in different voices all the time. I've wondered if anyone's found that strange or not.
Great. Let's take another question. We got another question right here.
How do you please your woman? No, that was my question.
Was that for Sex Ed Vincent?
This guy asked that question.
Was that for Sex Ed? Was that question for Sex Ed Vincent for How You Please Your Woman?
No, it was last night. Great. And Ed said that he doesn't reveal that personal information.
Is Ed Sex Ed Vincent pretty sexually repressed?
No, the line that I used to have in that show was like, he's a celibate man, not his choice. And he's been celibate for the last 7 years and 10 out of the last 12 years.
Like, my biggest
just me, basically, okay. he hasn't
my
been scoring.
My biggest fear, if I was that character, is that I would end up like him. Do you ever have that? Like, oh shit, this is kind of like who I am? Do you ever have that or not?
Not with that character.
Okay, but there's other characters that you do?
Not really.
Okay.
No.
No. I must be really fucked up. Do you think?
No, I don't
okay.
think so.
I think so. Okay, great. What was your... Did you have a real question?
I was going to say, it was funny you being... Or I didn't know the thing about you being Bob Newhart's...
Nephew.
Nephew.
Yeah.
And I think that's... He had such a great... His stuff almost seemed like it was improvised. Mm. He had such a great... especially like the phone...
Yeah.
Stuff that he would do and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that there's almost that especially with the sex ed stuff that we saw last night. It's very personable type. A very personable display.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that he had too.
Appreciate that.
I think the other thing I'd like to add is I think you both of you guys are understated. Like you don't ever, you've never pushed the comedy.
I'd say like I like to do that sparingly, mm-hmm. like play a crazier, over the top energy, probably more sparingly.
Mm-hmm. But I mean you're very very grounded, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As
yeah,
a
yeah.
performer.
Okay.
That's a compliment.
I'll
know it didn't
it. Yeah,
sound
yeah.
like one, but it,
yeah.
it's a compliment. Great. Another question? Yeah, back here.
I know you've been on Tell Me Bang Bang several times, but am I wrong not as Sex Ed Vincent? Have you not been on there as that character?
No, I haven't.
And it seems like a character that would fit in that mythology of characters that they kind of have on that show.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there a reason for that you have not taken that character to that?
I think the only times I've been on Comedy Bang Bang. I was doing it with Taryn Killam, the two of us. So we were doing something else.
You're horse fighting. Yeah.
What's that?
You're horse fighting.
Oh, yes, yes. I couldn't hear you said horse fighting. Yes. So we were doing something together in those situations on the podcast and on the TV show. So, yeah.
Great. Another question right here.
So it seems like, you know, you were saying you had the dream of being on SNL since you were, like, nine. And now that, like, you've achieved that, what's like, the next thing? Like, what's your improv?
Just lots more, like, creating my own original comedy in, I think a goal of mine would be to have a sketch show on TV one day. That's something I would love to do at some point. And just continue, like, creating characters and writing other stuff that I really like. You know, taking advantage of the different opportunities, like in TV and film, that come my way. Maybe doing a podcast about improv.
Great, we got another question right over here.
What's your character finding process look like? So when you first get, like, really excited about a character, how do you get to something that you want to do on stage?
Oh, wow. I don't know. Because sometimes I'm real good at coming up with the idea and then being like 4 days later, I don't love it as much as I did 4 days ago. So really it's just whatever the situation, it's just forcing yourself to get up and do it somewhere on stage and try it out and see how much you like it. And yeah, you know, doing it on stage in front of an audience is pretty invaluable. So
what do you learn when you do that?
You can learn what the audience potentially responds to. You can learn what it is you like doing with the character. I feel like with that sex ed show, which, you know, I was doing like a 45-minute show in that character, it just made it that so much easier. It made it easier on the, like, potentially the writing process, because I was just spending so much time, you know, with sort of that point of view that... Like I said, he can respond to anything that comes at him from the world, and he has his own, you know, specific point of view. So nothing really other than, like, just getting up there on stage and doing it and seeing what happens.
Great. We got
Is
time
that helpful?
For... Yes. Oh. One more right here.
What part of your career did you enjoy the most so far? And why?
I don't. That's tough. All of it, you know. I can't say any one thing. Really, you know, my time in Chicago was amazing and so invaluable. Like, just that community that we come from. Like, it really shapes what you do. It makes you get better so quickly because you're seeing so many other talented performers, and in some ways, you're performing for the other, you know, your peers, you know, you're hoping you make, you know, your friend who you think is so funny, make them laugh or do something that they think is really good. That's amazing. SNL is amazing. Getting to, you know, work with, you know, be on Stephen Merchant's show, and getting to, like, improvise with him in a scene was amazing. So, and getting to do, like, a recurring character on Trophy Wife and work with those actors. Really, all of it's been great. I don't know if
Well,
that was
Paul Britton, we think there's going to be a lot more amazing things for you coming up. Thank you so much for being our guest on Improv Nerd.
Oh, thanks, Jimmy. Appreciate
Thank you.
It.
And there you have it. Another episode of Improv Nerd is in the can. The Paul Britton episode. And I love the story about Paul McCartney and the note he gave him. It was great. So I want to thank Paul Britton for being our guest. I also want to thank Dave Buckman down here at the Out of Bounds Comedy Festival in Austin, Texas, for making sure that we were taken care of, but also that he brought the show down. So I really want to thank him. And lining up the musicians, Joseph and Karen, for doing the Improv Nerd theme. And I'd also like to thank my producer here in Chicago, Dan Schiffmacher, for making me sound so slick and so professional.
If you want more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my improv blog, my improv book, Improv Therapy, which will help you get out of your way to become an even better improviser, and sign up on our newsletter, and every week you will get an improv blog that will make you a better improviser, just go to my website, jimmycorain.com. That's jimmycorain.com, and sign up. We are part of a wonderful comedy podcast. I think it's probably some of the funniest, most original podcast out there, and that is Feral Audio. So go and check that out, and check out the latest Put Your Hands Together, which is a bunch of hilarious stand-ups, new stand-ups every week. So check that out on feralaudio.com. We continue to take over social media. Go to our Improv Nerd Facebook page and like us, because it really helps with my low self-esteem. Also, we are on Twitter. Follow us. We're improv_nerd. And I'd like to thank our sponsor, Hotel Lincoln, and I'd like to thank you for listening. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Hello, I'm Dave Ross.
Hey, and I'm Hampton Yunt.
And we host Suicide Buddies on Starburns Audio.
That's right. It's a podcast about suicide, but not to make light of it. We actually talk about suicidal thoughts, depression, kind of with a sense of levity that Dave and I have with each other. And he's my best friend. Come on.
Yeah, we're buddies. Suicide Buddies.
That's the title.
One of our favorite episodes that we've recorded so far is about this guy, Jan Pataki, who was a Polish aristocrat in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And he, one of the reasons it's possible that he killed himself is that he thought he was a werewolf.
Oh.
Check out a clip. It also makes me think, like, we were talking about in the Norway black metal episode, how, like, just the culture of your surroundings can affect you. Like, yeah. He's in a castle in Poland. He's like, I mean, if you lived in a castle in Poland and no one knew anything about anything, you might be like, I'm a bat. I'm probably a bat.
That's like literally what happened to Batman. He literally is in his mansion. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I'm a bat.
I'm a
bat that helps people.
I'm a bat that helps people.
I'm a rich...
I don't know what you want from me. And my girlfriend, she's a cat. She's a cat.
My girlfriend's a cat.
She steals things. She's a woman who steals things. She's a cat. I'm a bat.
I'm a bat. I help people. She's a cat. We fight a penguin.
My